Now, the Buckeye Extra Podcast with Rob Aller, Bill Rabinowitz, and Joey Kaufman from the Columbus Dispatch.
The Buckeye Extra Podcast is brought to you by Rosati Windows, Central Ohio's number one replacement window company.
Hello, Buckeye fans. This is Joey Kaufman from the Dispatch. I'm joined by Bill Rabinowitz. Rob Aller is off today. It's March 31st, and it's one day after Ohio State held its pro day. And normally this is an annual event, and we would be covering it as normal. But arguably this year it has heightened importance. Without the NFL scouting combine, this was the one opportunity that Ohio State's draft prospects had to work out in person in front of teams. There were fewer in-person workouts throughout this spring. So this was a one-shot deal for Justin Fields to throw in front of scouts, for Jonathan Cooper, Baron Browning, Pete Warner, Trey Sermon, all these guys to be there, right, in person with scouts just a few feet away from them. So, Bill, what was your main takeaway? I guess Justin Fields really grabbed most of the headlines from Tuesday afternoon's pro day.
Yeah, he's the obvious one because he's the only likely first-round pick. He's going to be a first-round pick. It's doubtful that anyone else will be a first-round pick from Ohio State. And again, without having the other, the combine and some of the other ways that in a normal year you'd be able to be evaluated, this was it. I thought he was terrific. Now, you would expect someone to do well on a pro day. It's a controlled environment. There's no pass rush. You're not going to worry about getting sacked. It's just a platform to display your abilities, and he certainly has plenty of ability. And he ran well, ran a 4.44 40. Everything's unofficial, but that's what kind of the consensus is about the time of his 40. And threw the ball really well. There were a couple throws that were like, wow, and we've seen those in games. It's not like he hasn't shown that before. So he did what he wanted to do. And solidified his place, I'm sure, in the top 10, which I think he was already. I think there's no way he falls. I would say it'd be below Carolina at number 8 and probably before that. It just depends on how things shake out. I mean, San Francisco made a trade to get up to number 3, and there was speculation they did it because they really liked Mac Jones. Who knows? I mean, Kyle Shanahan went to Alabama's pro day to see Mac Jones instead of going to Ohio State's, although he said he would, if Fields works out, again, he would go to Ohio State, so who knows? A lot of smoke screens in the NFL around the draft, so don't put stock in a whole lot of what people do or say. But, yeah, he was the headliner. I thought Tommy Togiai with 40 bench press reps was, what you'd expect him to be. That's impressive. I thought, Justin Hilliard moved well. I thought Baron Browning moved well. Pete Warner. Those were guys that stood out to me as much as you can really tell just watching on TV.
Yeah, I want to touch on Fields because I think he really had the day. He's the first round pick. He's going, anytime you have a quarterback at a pro day, it becomes an event that's larger than your typical pro day. And the throwing session, he looked great. I mean, it's a lot of this is pre-scripted. It's routes on air. I mean, I'm having a hard time coming up with a quarterback who you can think of that, man, he really had a terrible pro day and looked awful. They all look good. I think that my takeaway from him was just how fast the 40 time was, because for a quarterback to run a 4.44 is really rare. You don't see it that often. It was the fastest. If you just look at combine numbers and pro days are being used in place of the combine this year, it was the fastest since RG3 in 2012. So that is rare. And we knew Justin Fields could throw the ball. I mean, you just flip back to the game tape last year and we saw him throw the ball, but because I think Ohio State was hesitant to run him as much, we didn't really maybe get to see his running ability as much if it was an Urban Meyer coach team. But I think the athleticism is just really impressive to me. And I think that was the main takeaway. Those are the only two things he did, just the 40-yard dash and the throwing session. He didn't do any of the other drills like the shuttle run or the bench or anything like that.
Yeah, he was what you expect. Now, we all knew he was really fast, too. I mean, I wasn't shocked at the time, but usually you hear, and again, it's a little bit comparing apples to oranges because the 40 times in Indianapolis tend to be a little bit slower than the 40 times at pro days for whatever reason. It's just kind of the way it is. But look, if this were Indianapolis and he'd run a 4.5, that's still exceptional for a quarterback. It's he is very fast. There's no doubt about that. But the throwing is what really matters. And almost all of his throws yesterday were just right on target with zip and touch. And you know, there were very few throws that were off target. You know, it wasn't his pro day, obviously, because Garrett Wilson's coming back to Ohio State, but he made a catch along the sidelines. You know, Garrett Wilson kind of catch, you kind of go, well, next year it'll be yours, Chris Olave, too. Now, if Chris Olave had come out this year, he would have been a first-round pick, I'm pretty sure. So it's when we say that Ohio State only has one likely first-round pick, Chris Olave is going to be a first-round pick. I'm pretty safe in saying that. And Garrett Wilson, I think, is, you know, depending on what kind of year he has, could be also.
Yeah, ESPN's NFL Live, when they were dissecting Fields' performance afterwards, they turned their attention to 2022 at one point and brought up Garrett Wilson will be draft eligible, and we're replaying some of his catches, especially the one on the sideline where he just did a little toe tap to stay in bounds. And he's going to be – they could conceivably have two first-round wide receivers pick next year, which is good news for the upcoming quarterback, whether it's Jack Miller, C.J. Stroud, or Kyle McCord. Bill, you mentioned as well that the other aspect of Pro Day is trying to read tea leaves on who is represented from which NFL teams were there. And it was interesting because John Lynch, the GM for the 49ers, and Kyle Shanahan, their coach, they just traded up to number three, were not at Ohio State's Pro Day. They were in Alabama to watch Mac Jones throw. And the flip side of the coin is the Atlanta Falcons, who have the number fourth pick in the draft, brought their entire brass to Columbus to watch Fields throw. The GM, coach, offensive coordinator were reportedly all there. We were not there, so we're kind of relying on what the television networks show. But it seems like if Fields is not picked by the 49ers, he could conceivably go to number four overall to the Atlanta Falcons, which would be his hometown team and really would be full circle in a way after starting his career at Georgia. And can you imagine, when's the last time we've seen a quarterbacks go 1, 2, 3, and 4 in the draft?
I'm not sure it's happened. I'm not exactly a draft historian, but I don't think it's happened. You know, and if that does happen, if it goes to the Falcons, you have a similar situation on the surface as Dwayne Haskins going to Washington a couple of years ago. And, you know, that didn't work out well for Dwayne. But, you know, they're two different players, two different people, and I don't think that it's going to be the same kind of issue with Justin. But it is an interesting coincidence if he does go to Atlanta at number four. And Carolina's, you know, pretty close to his home, too. So it's interesting. The 49er thing kind of threw everything, you know, out of whack in terms of what people were predicting how the draft would go. But, it, you know, who knows how it's going to play out? Who knows what San Francisco is really thinking?
We should take a quick commercial break, and we'll be back soon. You have to stand behind a statement like the best buying experience in the business. At Rosati Windows, their commitment to the customer has not changed since day one. Mike Rosati realizes that people have options when choosing replacement windows, which is why he appreciates each and every one of their customers. At Rosati Windows, they pride themselves on the very high standards of business ethics and customer satisfaction. They are accredited with an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, a top business with customer choice, and voted by Central Ohio as the best business in the window community with the Columbus Dispatch. That list goes on and on, but it's important to point out their customers voted for Rosati Windows for these awards, and it's why they make a statement like, Rosati Windows is the best buying experience in the business. Well, I guess we would have had to do a little more research on the draft and history of quarterbacks going 1, 2, 3, 4. But I do remember in 1999, that was when the Browns came back. They took Tim Couch Tim Couch number one, and then McNabb went number two, and Kelly Smith went number three to the Bengals. So
yeah, and the only one that panned out was McNabb. I mean, I covered those Browns, and I will always maintain that Tim Couch would have been a perfectly serviceable quarterback if he had not been drafted by an expansion team that gave him no protection. And he could have developed at a normal rate. I mean, I think would he have been Peyton Manning? No, but he would have been just perfectly fine. And he just, you know, he hurt his shoulder and or elbow, I forget which one it was, and that was it for him. But, you know, Kelly Smith was a bust. And Donovan McNabb had a really good career. But there were other guys. Cade McNown was in that draft. He was a bust. It's amazing how many quarterbacks just proved to be busts. And I think so much of that really doesn't have a lot to do with the quarterback. I mean, obviously it does. But there are so many factors beyond the player himself. Who's the team that he goes to? What kind of coaching does he have? What kind of organization is it? What's the talent around him? What's the scheme? Does he get hurt? All these factors that a quarterback doesn't have a whole lot of control over dictate whether his career goes the way people expect it to or not. So it's, yeah, the quarterback's got to do his part. The player's got to do his part. But there's so many factors. It's a team sport. There are 11 players on the field. And I always say to people, it's not where you go, it's the right fit. It's not how high you go in the draft, it's finding the right place. I'm sure that right now, if you would ask Tom Brady, if you had to do it all over again, would you rather be a first-round pick or be a sixth-round pick and get very little signing bonus and the rest is history? There's no question which he would pick.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting just being in a little bit of a Columbus bubble, and you hear a lot of, I think, people who've watched Ohio State closely over the last couple of years here are miffed in some ways that Fields isn't going to at least go number two, and that most of the, I guess, the presumption is that Zach Wilson, the BYU quarterback, will end up going to the Jets with the second overall pick. And a lot of Ohio State fans, media will point out that who exactly did Zach Wilson face last year? I mean, the best defense he probably faced was Coastal Carolina, and Justin Fields had his upper body torn in half and threw for almost a half a dozen touchdown passes in a Sugar Bowl win against Clemson. It's in some ways, if you just replay their seasons, it seems like Fields was above Wilson, but a lot of the draft people seem to think it will be Zach Wilson who goes number two to the Jets. But the other side of the coin is, if you are talking about situation and fit and which is a more ideal scenario, I would say the most ideal scenario for a quarterback is not going to the New York Jets.
Right. I mean, Sam Darnold's there now. He's never really had a chance to prove whether he's the guy or not. And now he's apparently on the outs. And, you know, they're going to trade him and get below market for certainly what he was a couple of years ago. And he could end up being a good quarterback in this league. I don't think he's proven that he's not. I mean, I don't think he's Mitchell Trubisky where you go, well, you know, we don't see it. Sam Darnold, the jury's still out. And so the Jets are known as being one of the most dysfunctional franchises in the league. And so if that means that Justin Fields avoids going to New York with the pressure and knowing it's probably going to be a couple of years before they can turn around, then he's probably better off going somewhere else.
Yeah, I remember, I mean, in covering Sam Darnold when he was coming out of USC, I always thought he would perform well in the NFL because he was, I think, what the league wants. And he's a quarterback who can make plays off schedule and roll out and make plays off script. But the problem with being the quarterback for the New York Jets, just about everything is off script and you're running for your life and having to make every throw. I mean, it's one thing where you face a pass rush and have to do that every now and then, but just the amount of pressure that he faces as a quarterback, it's just hard in that environment. So if you are Justin Fields and then you contrast that with maybe going number three, say the 49ers do take him and maybe the Mac Jones stuff is a little bit of a smokescreen and maybe they feel they have to do more research on him and he ends up going to the San Francisco, that's a great scenario because they have a great defense and they feel their defense probably could win a Super Bowl. And you get to play in Kyle Shanahan's offense, who's one of the better play callers and quarterback, I think, whispers in the NFL. So that's a huge difference in sort of the scenario that you could end up and really benefit him as a whole. I almost cut you off there.
Well, for what it's worth, the 49ers are where Ryan Day coached for a year. Now, I don't know that anyone's really there from his time. I haven't studied that. But there's got to be some kind of institutional knowledge or some kind of I'm assuming the 49ers would be able to tap into what Ryan Day thinks better than the average NFL team. You know, he was with the 49ers for a year after he was with the Eagles for a year following coaching under Chip Kelly, right?
Right.
That's what happens when you get old. Chip Kelly, that's his name. Remember him? So, yeah, look, Justin Fields is going to be fine. He's going to sign an eight-figure contract, and he's going to be set for life. and he's going to be in the NFL. You know, there are a lot of other guys on this last Buckeye team that are going to be fighting just to have an NFL future. You know, I'm thinking about some of the other guys that worked out yesterday. Jonathan Hooper from Gahanna, obviously. He took a lot of reps, did some linebacker drills. And he's an interesting case because he wanted to have a breakout year after a loss 2019. And he was good last year. You know, he wasn't Chase Young, obviously, because nobody is. But, you know, he was a solid player, a great leader. And now he's probably projected as a later round draft pick and may have to change positions, which he seems fine with doing. You know, it'll be interesting to see whether a defensive end can make that transition outside linebacker, but he's certainly willing to do it.
Yeah, that was – I think one of the more notable developments yesterday from just probably a news standpoint was the fact that Jonathan Cooper said most teams have talked to him about playing outside linebacker. He would be a strong side linebacker in a 3-4 defense, and he would probably end up still rushing the quarterback a fair bit out of that spot. He'd be in a stand-up role, but he would also have more responsibilities to drop in coverage, and he didn't have that at Ohio State. He was exclusively an end. He would put his hand on the ground and rush the passer. He wasn't really dropping back into the pass coverage as much. And the flip side of the coin was Baron Browning was also he said that teams have talked to him about playing defensive end potentially at the next level, and he said he's open to that. He said teams have talked to him about playing Mike linebacker, being a situational pass rush, outside linebacker, and defensive end. So he's a little bit of a Swiss Army knife in terms of where he could end up with his versatility. But he in particular seemed to have a really good day. If we're going to kind of go over some of the rest of the guys from Pro Day who probably helped themselves with testing. And I think people knew Baron Browning was an athletic guy coming in. I don't think that was a great surprise. He was always regarded for his athleticism because some of the highlight plays he had over the last couple of years, I think really showed that. He had 40 inches in his vertical. He had 4.58 or 5.9 40 time, almost 11 feet in the broad jump. So to me, he really, I think, solidified himself as an athlete in this draft.
There were also a couple of injury updates kind of stuff. Josh Myers revealed that he got hurt, basically had a turf toe. It sounded worse than that, actually. It was a fracture in the Northwestern game, in the Big Ten championship game, and gutted through the last two games and did some serious damage to his foot. He did surgery, avulsion was the term he used. I haven't looked that up exactly, so I don't even know what that is, but it doesn't sound good. I don't think avulsion is what you're looking for. And Wyatt Davis, we knew about his knee issue because there were times during the season he would go down and obvious pain. He said he hurt it against Indiana and, again, gutted through it. He said it did not require surgery, just rehab and rest. And so he's good to go. Josh Myers is still midway through what he said was a four-month rehab. Both those guys are projected to be probably second-day picks, the second or third round. Wyatt Davis was projected before last year as being a likely first-round pick. I think the knee did affect him. I think he was good last year, very good last year. But I don't think he was as dominating as he was in 2019. I'm sure the knee was the reason for that. So if a team's looking for a first round value and a second round pick, it'd be a pretty good pick there. And Josh Myers obviously can play guard or center. And those guys are really valuable commodities in the NFL. Really strong guy, you know, improved a ton as a pass rusher. He didn't really do it at all in high school. His team, Miamisburg, ran a wing T. So it was a completely different offense going to Ohio State. And so he's already gone through one transition in terms of blocking expectations. And he's a smart guy. And, you know, both those guys, Wyatt Davis and Josh Myers, are smart guys. They're team guys. They're tough guys, as they've showed by playing through those injuries. So I think those are going to be really solid NFL players. You know, are they going to be all pros? You know, who knows? But they're going to be kind of plug-and-play NFL starters for a long time, I think.
Yeah, I think some people have been surprised to see Wyatt Davis not projected still as a first-round pick. And I know that was some of the talk in the early season, but I do think it's important to keep in mind it's rare interior offensive linemen are going to go among the first round picks. I was looking this up a couple weeks ago, but I mean, twice in the last 4 years, no guard was taken in the first round. You don't typically see that unless it's an elite guy. I think Notre Dame had a guy, Quentin Nelson, a couple years ago who went in the top five, which is almost unheard of. But there are occasionally guys like that who will go really high as a guard, like a can't miss guy. And then guards will typically start falling in the second, third round. Even if you're the top guard or center, you're not going to go until the second or third round. So I think that's more the issue for Wyatt Davis. Even if he was healthy and had a knee, I don't know how – I think it would have been a little bit of a reach to go to into the first round because teams are looking to maximize value. You're looking to get an elite quarterback. You're looking to get an elite defensive end, an elite shutdown corner, and you typically are trying to maximize the positional value because those are the three positions that sign the biggest free agent deal. So you want to try and get a guy in a rookie deal who's going to be really good really quickly at one of the three most important positions.
We mentioned injuries, and another player that fits that category didn't work out yesterday because he's still injured is Sean Wade. You know, there was a guy that, again, projected to be a first-round pick before last season and had an up-and-down year and played through a turf toe, as it turned out. You know, that could explain a lot of his struggles. I mean, who knows how much it really affected him. Again, a team that picks him in, let's say, the third or fourth round could get a steal if he's healthy and is able to prove that the inconsistency last year was more related to the injury than it was what he is as a player. And he'll have a chance to prove that. Look, unless you're a first or second round pick, after that, probably third-round pick too, you know, you've got to prove it. It doesn't matter really whether you're a fifth-round pick or a seventh-round pick in the draft. When you get to training camp, you're going to have to earn a spot. And so if Sean Wade is going to be higher than a fifth-round pick, I'm almost certain. But if you are – he'll have his chances. And you know, Jeff Okuda, if you were to say 2 years ago, before Jeff Okuda's last year at Ohio State, okay, you're going to have Jeff Okuda and Sean Wade. Is there a huge difference between them? You probably would have said no. I mean, yeah, Okuda hadn't been hurt like Sean Wade had been, but they were five-star guys and fairly comparable players. And Jeff Okuda had a monster 2019, and Sean Wade had struggled in 2020. So, but the talent's still there.
Yeah, Sean Wade had a first-round ceiling to me because he is a little bigger of a corner. He's 6 feet and a half, and he was actually listed at 6'1" last year, and he measured 6 foot and a half yesterday, maybe a little smaller than you thought he would. But still, that's pretty good size for a corner, and if he had a good year, it seemed like he did have the potential to go there. It is I really am curious how much that turf toe affected him and whether that – how – I don't want to say it's revisionist history, but we haven't talked to him yet, so we don't really have a good sense on how much that really was a factor. His agent said that was the reason for delaying his workout until April 14th. So I imagine we'll get a better sense of how he's feeling after that. But he was probably the guy, I think, who really could have slid into the first round, late in the first round, just because of position more than anything. And really, it went the other way.
Yeah, and we mentioned just in passing Pete Warner. I think he's going to be a really solid NFL player. His versatility, his athleticism, his intelligence, his instincts. He's not a first-round guy, and it may not be a second-round guy, but I think that when you get to the third round, he'd be a kind of a no-brainer pick because he's going to just be a solid NFL guy that you can move and use in a lot of different ways. And so this is not a class that has a ton at the top in terms of Ohio State, in terms of first-round picks, but it's got a lot of depth to it. You can look at a lot of these guys, and I even think about a guy like Luke Farrell, who has overshadowed his entire NFL or his entire Ohio State career. Even last year, Jeremy Ruckert kind of got more attention than he did, and you know, Jeremy Ruckert's a terrific player. But Luke Farrell was described by Kevin Wilson, his position coach, Ohio State's offensive coordinator, as being the best blocking tight end. He's the best blocking tight end he's ever had, I think he said.
I thought he said best blocking tight end in this draft class.
In this draft, okay. And he can catch the ball. You know, he's not a burner. He's not Ruckert as a receiver, but he's got sure hands. And I think for a later round pick, he goes in the fifth, sixth round. That's a great pick. I think Luke Farrell's going to has a chance to have a really good NFL career.
Well, Ohio State had him on the field last year for a lot of snaps, and they played Luke Farrell in a lot of two tight end sets, and they weren't just having him on the field for the heck of it. I mean, if by putting Luke Farrell on the field, they were taking away maybe a receiver. Maybe they could have put in another playmaker receiver. And so I think that shows the level of trust they had him as a blocker and the value that he had on the field for them to then maybe catch a pass here and there. But I think that is not insignificant. I do want to circle back to Pete Warner, because I think he deserves a little more than just a passing mention. But there's a very good, I think, argument to be made or possibility that he could be the second or third Ohio State player taken in this draft. I think he's in that conversation with Baron Browning and Wyatt Davis and Josh Myers, where you could conceivably see him the next guy after Justin Fields, because his testing numbers were right up there with Baron Browning. He ran a sub-4.6 40, and I think showed pretty good athleticism and has good instincts at linebacker, because Baron Browning only had the track record that Pete Warner had on the field at his career at Ohio State in terms of the number of snaps and plays and instincts that he made. So, I mean, they play a little different. I think Baron Browning is more of a stand-up pass rusher, edge rusher in the NFL, and Pete Warner is maybe more of an inside guy. He said he likes kind of being up there at the line of scrimmage and making plays. But, I mean, I think that will probably end up being one of the more interesting subplots to watch during the draft is who is going to end up being the first guy picked after Justin Fields goes in the top 10.
Yeah, and factor in Justin Hilliard, who, assuming that he can prove to NFL teams that his injury history is behind him, he played like the five-star guy he was supposed to be by the end of his career. He was fantastic at the end of last year. I mean, he was a difference maker on a defense that, frankly, did not have a lot of difference makers. They needed kind of his big playability, and he showed it. And so if he's healthy, that's the always the question with him, you could get a steal. And I don't know if he's going to fall that far. I mean, I think if you got a Justin Hilliard in the fourth round, I think that'd be pretty enticing guy to take at that spot.
Trey Sermon also had a pretty good day and helped himself.
Joey, I should point out, Joey's doing a draft diary with Trey Sermon.
I'm trying to get you to click.
BuckeyeExtra.com, Dispatch.com.
But, I mean, he didn't – his 40 time was not blazing. But, I mean, he showed a good vertical jump at 37 inches, and I think people saw that a little bit last year during the Clemson game with his hurdle. And I think he has some nice agility in his cutting ability, and he's not a end-to-end blazing speed guy, but I think you got to see a little bit of that movement, and he'll be maybe a fourth round pick. I don't.
Yeah, that's probably.
Know. It seems to be what they were talking about on the networks yesterday.
Yeah, so running backs
right, but that could be a good value out of that spot. And he also got to catch passes for Justin Fields during the throwing session, and we didn't see him really throw the ball or catch the ball a ton out of the backfield. Ryan Day said that might have been a larger part of their offense had they had more practice time in the preseason. So I thought that always helps if you're running back and you can show you can catch the ball out of the backfield and help out on third down.
40 time was never going to be Trey Sermon's strength. He's just not that kind of player. He's much more of a vision and cutback and that kind of running back. And let's face it, when's the last time you saw an NFL running back go for an 80-yard run? Yeah, it just doesn't happen very often. The NFL is about getting your running back to get you first downs and do a lot of different things. Pass protect, which he can do, catch the ball in the backfield, get you the 5 yards, get you the 3 yards when you need it. Trey Sermon, the last three games, the before he obviously got hurt against Alabama, was as dominating a running back as Ohio State's ever had in those three games. The Northwestern game, obviously, there was the record-setting game. They don't win that game without Trey Sermon. I mean, that was an off game for Justin Fields. He bailed him out. And I don't want to say he came out of nowhere, but, you know, he kind of did, because the first half of the year, he was quite ordinary. Really, we were all thinking, what's so special about Trey Sermon we'd heard about? Well, he showed it once he got comfortable and he just took off. And so I think Trey Sermon's going to be a useful player. Again, running backs are so devalued in the draft now. It's just almost hardly – you hardly see a running back taken in the first round. I think this year, Najee Harris, who I – when I watched him, you know, in the championship game, boy, he's impressive. I mean, I really, really like him as a player. And you have Travis Etienne. Other than that, I don't think anybody that even mentioned as a potential first-round pick as a running back.
Well, even last year, J.K. Dobbins, a 2,000-yard rusher at Ohio State and who had a great rookie season with the Baltimore Ravens, wasn't actually picked until later in the second round. So it's just hard for running backs to crack that first round because it's – in some ways, they become like the kind of what we talked about with some of the interior linemen is teams are just not looking to draft that position in the first round unless it's a truly, truly – special player. It's a funky draft with Ohio State in a way because they're so accustomed to having multiple first round picks, and that's obviously not going to be the case this year. But there's still a lot of depth in the class. Conceivably, you could have a dozen guys picked. I mean, they had the most NFL combine invites, even though there wasn't individual workouts or drills or any testing at a combine this year. They still did invitees for players, and they're gonna have a lot of guys picked. They just won't be as high as we're maybe accustomed to seeing. Next year, though, I think they're gonna have multiple first round picks again. You figure between Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson, and I don't know, maybe Zach Harrison has a really big year and vaunts himself into that. But I think there's some potential for next year to have multiple guys going round one.
Yeah, the wide receivers, obviously, and Jeremy Rucker could play himself into that. It's a little bit of a reach for tight ends unless you're Pitts from Florida. What's his first name? Why am I drawing a blank?
Kyle Pitts.
Kyle Pitts. You know, unless you're kind of – and he's almost more of a wide receiver than a tight end. I mean, he's a special player, but it's not – totally rare, but it's pretty unusual for a tight end to go in the first round. But Ruckert, you know, certainly will be a fairly high draft pick if he has the year that we expect him to have, the second, third round, worst case scenario. Seven Banks could be a guy that if he follows the normal Ohio State cornerback progression, could play himself into that role. It's Ohio State. It's just a matter there's always talent now. There's always talent coming out of Ohio State.
You know, maybe Hassel Garrett will be a guy to watch this year, right, too, as a lineman. He coming back and maybe using this as a springboard. I don't think he's quite the same as a defensive end, but still I think he'll be one to watch. I feel the most confident about Wilson and Olave. The rest, I think they're all going to need a breakout year in some form or fashion.
Well, Nicholas Petit-Frere and Thayer Munford are going to be high draft picks. So they were fantastic last year. I expect them to be just as good this year or better. Those guys are going to be very highly praised. I mean, I think that Nicholas Petit-Frere is probably more the prototype NFL tackle. Munford, I think he's going to be a really good player. He's a really good player. You know, he's more of a kind of a gritty guy, I think. You know, I just think he's just kind of a more of a mauler in certain ways. I mean, with technique, I don't want to say he doesn't use technique. He does, but he's just, I don't know. I'm not just the way I think of them, but both of them are going to be pretty big NFL prospects next year.
And the other guy to watch is probably not going to be eligible actually until 2023, but Paris Johnson, I think is the other tackle who's now playing.
Let's let him play a little bit before he play a little bit. He played some, but let's let him be a starter before we start.
I'm not saying he's going to be. I'm just saying these are the ones I'm watching to see if they
And Paris Johnson, he's a hell of a writer, by the way.
Yeah, maybe he
writes for the Lantern, Ohio State student newspaper, done good stuff. You know, I think his career path may be, you know, hopefully he's not thinking of that for a career, but it's impressive.
Yeah, it's I guess if it'll come down to newspapers or the NFL draft, we'll see which one he
be a tough call for Paris.
Yeah. I hear they both pay well, though.
Yeah, very well. Very well. Well, I think when we start talking about journalism as a career alternative to the NFL, it's probably time to wrap up the podcast. What do you think, Joey?
I think so. I think it's a good way to segue us out. of here, and we will be back next week to talk more on Ohio State football. And there will be about a halfway through spring ball after this week, so it's going to end sooner than you think here with spring game on April 17th coming not too far down the pipe.
As always, thank you for listening.
The Buckeye Extra Podcast is made possible by Rosati Windows, Central Ohio's number one replacement window company.
Be sure and subscribe to the Buckeye Extra Podcast in the iTunes Store, the Google Play Store, or on Stitcher.